Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is Closer Look, and I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, could a citywide curfew for Atlanta youth be part of many solutions needed in addressing youth-related crimes? Now, Councilmember Keisha Sean Waits is behind legislation, and she'll join the program in just a moment to talk all about that. Also this hour, despite inflationary woes, holiday retail sales for November, December, guess what? It's expected to gross between $940 billion and $960 billion. So much for inflation. Here's some questions. If you ordered your item online, or if you go to the store, will it be in stock or will it be shipped? Well, we'll talk all about that because it's the ongoing supply chain saga. We'll check in with John Haber. Also, new research from Georgia Tech shows Atlanta's nighttime rental scooter e-bike ban has led to more increased traffic congestion. So we'll talk more about that with the study's author. Important community conversations for sure, but first this. Asian American state lawmakers are launching their own caucus at the Georgia State Capitol. It comes as the number of Asian American state lawmakers continues to grow. Representative-elect Long Train of Dunwoody hopes state and legislative leaders reach out to the new caucus.
This is a very diverse caucus. Even though it's AAPI, you've got Vietnamese representation, Chinese, Korean, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, a very broad gamut of the Asian culture here in Georgia. So we're a wealth of knowledge.
And we'll have more about the upcoming legislative session tomorrow on Closer Look. In other news, early voting in Georgia continues to break records. Secretary of State's office says turnout hit nearly 300,000 people just yesterday. That's on top of the more than 180,000 that voted Saturday and Sunday in the counties that had their polls open. Now, Monday's mark is the single biggest day in Georgia's early voting history, topping a day in the 2020 presidential election. The numbers are also showing thousands of younger people who did not vote in November cast ballots in the runoff. Georgians are still spreading the flu or flu-like symptoms at one of the highest rates nationwide. That's according to the latest CDC data. State public health officials say more than 1,000 people across metro Atlanta have been hospitalized since the beginning of October. Officials say the spike in hospitalizations hasn't been this high this early since the 2009 swine flu pandemic. Public health officials urge Georgians to get their flu vaccine and, of course, continue to wash their hands. When we come back, Atlanta City Councilmember Keisha Sean Waits.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org. Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
And Closer Look continues from WABE here in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. As mentioned, could a citywide curfew for Atlanta youth be part of many solutions needed when we talk about addressing some youth-related crimes? Now, this, of course, after a weekend shooting near Atlantic Station left a 12-year-old boy dead and five others wounded. We welcome now Atlanta City Councilmember Keisha Sean Waits. Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Scott, for the opportunity.
Let's begin here because you, along with fellow council members yesterday, heard from De'Erica Charles, the mother of Zion Charles, again, the 12-year-old boy who was shot and killed this past Saturday. I want to play a clip for our listeners.
My son is gone. I don't have no son no more. Oh, he's gone. And I cried out for help. I cried out for it, y'all. I promise y'all, I cried out for it. But I felt my son. I felt my kids. I felt myself. I felt like I didn't do enough. But I cried. And I cried. I called him when I was there. I cried, y'all. I cried. Because y'all, please help. Help these young boys while they still got a chance. Because I don't have a chance no more. I don't.
Councilmember Waits, your emotions as you listened to Ms. Charles yesterday?
Ms. Scott, it was very difficult to listen to her remarks. I think that Zion's mom spoke the pain and anguish of so many Black mothers nationwide who have lost their children to violence. And she also gave a call to action, and mm-hmm. that is that Zion's death should not be in vain. And it is my hope and prayer that, you know, we can all coalesce. Zion is the son of Atlanta. And I think right now it's time for everyone to act. That is the retail vendors. That is all parents. That is faith organizations. And for us to put our hearts and minds together to find a solution.
When we talk about finding solutions, and again, depending on whom you ask, you'll get a lot of different initiatives. You'll get a lot of different suggestions. We're going to get to your curfew proposed legislation in a moment, but I want to go back because if folks are talking about what needs to happen, this is a holistic approach. You just mentioned a lot of different entities here. So you see this as it's going to take a holistic approach.
Absolutely. This is not a one-size-fits-all dynamic. And I want to be clear, many people don't know that we actually have a curfew in place at 11 p.m. for individuals who are 16 years and under. Mm-hmm. The exclusions that were done by Councilmember Amos were for homeless and unsheltered teens, individuals who are working in organized athletics. So there is a curfew in place. I think it's also important to note that Atlantic Station had a 3 p.m. curfew mm-hmm. on the day of the tragedy and the loss of Zion.
What's your response to someone who says, well, listen, at the end of the day, the city cannot parent young folks. There are so many other wraparound services that are needed. And I actually have a question here from a listener who says, look, you know, are there other services that the city and can also partner with other organizations that can help parents and children, give children some other option besides just hanging out? And we want to be clear, we all hung out with each other when we were young as well. So you want to be careful not to tell kids they can't hang out with their friends, of course, and they're doing something they ain't got no business doing. But can you understand folks saying, where do you draw the line here? And what is the city's role?
And Ms. Scott, I appreciate that. And I'm extremely sensitive to that conversation. I am a youth. I was a youth, rather, that engaged in organized athletics all of my high school years. And so I would have been one of those youth that would have fallen into the category that we are discussing. But while I appreciate for some families this may be an inconvenience, mm-hmm. I believe that this is a very small price to pay to save lives, because there is a responsibility. You are having to plan the funeral of your 12-year-old child. I can assure you, you would choose to be slightly inconvenienced. The other piece is this. We're not saying that young people shouldn't go out and enjoy themselves. What mm-hmm. we're saying is that large gatherings of youth should include some type of adult supervision. I am told that there were nearly 400 young people gathered at Atlantic Station on the evening of the loss of Zion. I think we all know having that many young people unsupervised without an adult probably is going to have some challenges. And someone had to have seen that many young people mm-hmm. getting on a train or you know, moving about. And again, I want to add that Atlantic Station had a 3 p.m. curfew. So, you know, again, this does not fall exclusively on APD or the Atlanta Police Department. No, mm-hmm. this is not the role that the city should play. But I also believe that it is our job to make decisions that will improve the quality of life and ensure public safety for everyone that resides in our city. And I believe, given the tragedy of Zion, that it is time for us to act and to put some measures in place that it's my belief that will possibly save the lives of other young people. We have a police shortage. Mm-hmm. We've had some challenges. I remember several months ago, we had 8 individuals who were shot at a gas station on Northside Drive here in Atlanta. And so, again, we're simply saying that 12-year-olds simply should have a guardian or some level of supervision to be out at that type of facility.
Let's talk about the legislation that you are proposing. This would call for a 7 p.m. citywide curfew for all youth ages 17 and under.
That is correct. Essentially, what we're asking for, unless you are involved in organized athletics, you're working a job, or you are with your parent or some type of supervised guardian that can provide, you know, care for you or whatnot, we believe that this is the hour, at least I believe that this is an hour that will be reasonable for young people, specifically a 12-year-old child, to be sheltered or to be home.
What's your response to someone that says, look, the Atlantic Station curfew was supposed to be effective in terms of public safety? Well, first of all, let's back up. Do you think that Atlantic Station's own curfew, was that effective at all?
Well, I think anytime you have 400 young people who are all gathered, it's my understanding that they did actually ask them to leave. Mm-hmm. Many of the small business owners were fearful after the shots were fired and frankly didn't know what to do. Again, this is not to demonize the Atlantic Station. They have hired additional security. There are 26 APD officers who work when they're off duty. Mm-hmm. And so they've taken the measures. They put the curfew in place. But they're going to have, this is going to require all of us, Ms. Scott. This is going to be a cooperative effort for everyone across the city to get engaged.
With this legislation, obviously, you talked about some, you know, exceptions. And also, too, as we know, many youth under the age of 17, they have jobs. And those jobs could also be important to their household. So you are going to allow for some of these exceptions. I mean, there are some as young as 15 that have after-school jobs.
In the summers, I had an after-school job at the age of 16. But I will submit this to you. That on the days that I was not, you know, engaged in riding the bus to and from work, my mom picked me up. Here's the reality. I think we know when you have someone that's out that has reasonable business to be out mm-hmm. in the after hours, and I think you know the difference. Again, as I indicated to you, one of the patrons described that scene. She said it looked like a high school had just let out from recess or some type of school venue. There were so many young people out there that no one really knew what was happening. It almost appeared to be some type of organized gathering. Mm-hmm. And again, this is not the responsibility that should fall exclusively on Atlantic Station. Last thing, that piece of legislation will also call for retail shopping centers, places where young people tend to gather, to deny access and or entrance. If you know that you're going to enter McDonald's and you're a young teen, and you're coming inside the facility and you're unsupervised and you don't have an adult with you, you should not be served. And these are drastic measures because these are drastic times.
Does something like that put extra force or could it cause problems for those retail establishments to say, look, you know, we already are trying to do what we can with our security. And does it put them in the middle of possibly, not saying it's going to happen, but possibly some type of conflict or tension with mass groups of people who want to come in and say, look, we want to shop. You can't deny me shopping.
Well, I think we've got to change the culture in Atlanta. And this is a very unique set of circumstances, Rose. And I think given the tragedy and the loss of Zion, again, as I said, Zion is a son of Atlanta, that his loss is on all of our hands. And so we all have to lean forward.
In what you heard, and we played a very small clip from the excerpt with Mrs. Charles, you also heard her talk about the fact that, listen, there needs to be something for these kids. There needs to be some intervention. And also, according to an article with the AJC, in terms of Ms. Charles mentioned the fact that her son was being coerced by older youth to break into cars. And that, according to Ms. Charles, she pleaded with APD to do something, to intervene. And according to her, they said they couldn't do anything because he hadn't technically committed a crime yet. She had talked about, listen, I even would want him to be arrested if he's doing something, to maybe teach him a lesson. There's so many optics around all of this. And again, it's not no one no one solution is going to solve all of this. But when you heard her talk about the fact that she said, look, older boys are have been influencing him, there's another problem there, too.
I think that this case speaks to several unmet needs. I think it speaks to the lack of affordable housing. I think it speaks to poverty, low wages, lack of access to healthcare or mental health care services. Many times, Zion's mother talked about him having mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this is one area where the city can act. We can pass policy that provides some type of wraparound services. We can act to work with KIPP, where this young man attended school, to get them brief services and counseling for the young people who have been impacted by his loss. So there are some things that mm-hmm. we can now do. I've received numerous emails from churches and faith organizations who want to provide support groups to mothers who've lost their children. So I think that this is also an opportunity, Ms. Scott, for us all to corral and rally together and, again, put our hearts and minds together to find a solution.
What's your response to someone who says you are proposing a citywide curfew? Perhaps it's unfair because there may be other areas of the city where this is not a problem. Is there a way to with this legislation, are you going to take suggestions that maybe somehow this be modified? Are you going to work with your fellow council members?
So, one, I want to be clear. I don't speak for all members of the Atlanta City Council.
Sure.
This is a proposal because I believe that we need something very much drastic in our city. There were several exceptions that were made for young people who have legitimate business, such as a job, organized athletics. And then we have a large group of unsheltered teens that we're also working mm-hmm. to provide assistance to. So I think that certainly we have put some measures in place to be sensitive to that. It's my belief, and again, I just simply want to be clear, that we also have to have a conversation about parental accountability. Mm-hmm. This is a no judgment zone. We're not judging anyone. Mm-hmm. But what we want to do is lean forward. We don't want to continue to be in a reactionary posture at all times. We know that we have challenges in our city regarding public safety. We've seen the data, and we know that oftentimes these crimes are committed by individuals who are less than 12 years of age. And I submit to you, there is no logical reason why a 12-year-old should be out unsupervised at any hour beyond 7 p.m.
What is your reaction and to those who are saying that there's something else that's not being talked about, the fact that this is also related to gun violence? And from what we know so far from APD, these are individuals all under the age of 18. We know that at least in both of these groups, these two groups that had some issue, folks had guns under the age of 18. What do you propose to address that? Do you make parents accountable if someone under the age of 18 commits a crime with a gun? I mean, there's so many. There's a lot here, I know. And I don't want you to think I'm picking on you, but there's just a lot involved here.
So, Rose, you and I spoke several years ago during my tenure at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. You know the lengths that we went to have conversations about gun reform. Mm-hmm. You're very familiar with this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to scapegoat and put this on Republicans. But frankly, that is a national conversation. We're talking about right here in Atlanta, what is the solution for today? We're speaking of something that I believe is a very small, minor inconvenience to parents and to stakeholders to save the lives of young people. With respect to gun reform, we know that we have a lot of work to do. We have an upcoming election to which you have some very difficult decisions to make. And frankly, I think that you know, it is time to have a very serious conversation surrounding gun reform and how we keep guns out of the hands of young people. But in the meantime, in terms of what we can do today, I think a curfew mm-hmm. is the first step.
What's the feedback from your fellow council members? Have folks pulled you to a side and say, look, you know, we really need to think about this? Do you have some support?
There are several members who are interested in moving something forward. I can't speak to what their legislation looks like. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it will be 7 p.m. And so I know for others, the time was problematic for some of them. And so hopefully on Monday, you will see some movement in terms of us coalescing around a piece of legislation that we all can live with. But again, I think given the tragedy and the loss of Zion, it is important that we lean forward and put some steps in place to protect the public and our young, vulnerable populations.
Did you have an opportunity to speak with Mrs. Charles at all?
Yesterday, when she concluded her comments, I went outside to chat with her. And at the time, the mayor's staff was speaking with her. There were a number of community leaders that were coalescing and surrounding her at the time. So I have not had the opportunity to speak to her one-on-one. But the aunt was present as well as the grandmother. And it is our hope to meet with them to talk about next steps and to figure out how we can provide them with any resources that may be needed.
Atlanta City Councilmember Keisha Shawn Waits, I appreciate you taking the time to address this very serious issue in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Have a great day.
Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. What inflation? Well, despite inflationary woes, holiday spending is expected to gross more than $900 billion in sales. Yes, billions would be. But here's a question. If you go to the store, will your item be in stock? Or if you bought it online, will it be shipped in time for the holidays? Which I guess would be Christmas or Kwanzaa or whatever you want to do. So, again, we talk about the ongoing supply chain saga. Joining me now, perhaps with some good news related to the supply chain, who knows? John Haber, Chief Strategy Officer for Transportation Insight. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Great to be here once again.
Now, is that a grin of good news or a grin of I've got bad news?
There's both, Rose, as always.
All right. So here, well, let's go back because I read this from an Axios piece. Quote, the supply chain woes that thwarted holiday shoppers last year are mostly resolved. Close quote. Then I read this from the supply chain brain. Quote, supply chain disruptions are a top concern of U.S. retailers as they enter the 2022 holiday season. Close quote. John, somewhere the truth lies in there, right?
It's constantly evolving.
What kind of answer is that?
Yes, things look much better at this time than they did last year. However, we have this small issue with a potential rail strike in the next 10 days.
Yes.
How that impacts the direct consumer for the holidays, 30% of cargo in the U.S. moves via the rails.
Right. I saw that. And in fact, I love this quote. Roughly 30% of freight moves by rail in the U.S., everything from chlorine to corn to cars, close quote. And you talked about the impact. Now, they say, I love it when folks say they, because I get on folks and they say they. Experts say this nationwide rail shutdown could cost the country $2 billion a day.
It would be devastating. That's why the president stepped in yesterday and asked Congress to step in. And prevent it from happening. However,
well, the White House tried to step in last time, and look what happened.
they did. Congress can step in, yeah. And they can force a deal. They can force mediation. And the problem is the labor unions do not want them to step in. And so you're dealing with, you know, a Democratic president. The labor unions support the president more so, I would say, than on the Republican side.
Well, President Biden appears to be supporting the freight workers here, though. It appears.
Well, the unions do not want Congress to step in and intercede.
Well, but if they can't get a deal done, what do you do? And let's back up then, because if they don't get a deal done, I think by December 9th is this deadline here. What will that? I mean, we talked about $2 billion a day loss, but for the holiday season, I mean, stores, retailers are still expecting product. You know, we're still expecting those, you know, I just ordered some very groovy curtains.
Yes. And so for you with the curtains, it's likely not to be impacted. The stuff that you
How do you know? You don't know where my curtain's coming from, John. I got some high-end curtains, brother.
But if they're high-end, they're not moving on the rails, probably. They're moving over via truck, or they're moving via air, not via the rails. Mm-hmm. Where the rails really come into play is on a lot of the resources and things that impact the way that consumers get to stores, yeah, and impact fuel and mm-hmm. impact resources and things like that. That's where you really see the problems. What the consumers are buying right now, it's either in a distribution center mm-hmm. or it's in a store.
Unless it's a very big, large. I was speaking yes. to someone who said, you know, they've still been waiting on their couch for like 3 months now, because that's coming obviously
correct.
From somewhere.
Correct. And it's not everything yeah. is in a distribution or in a store. But the areas that are really hurt by the rail stoppage, it's not necessarily the immediate purchase mm-hmm. that consumers are making and ordering online or going into a store. It's getting stuff to those stores for future purchases, mm-hmm. and it's more of the commodities that move right. on the rails that are really a big problem.
So that could mean everything from what goes on our table, you know, to ingredients that they need to make the things. It could be a lot.
Raw materials, yeah. food. Now, UPS is a huge user of the rails, mm-hmm. and so it could impact things that are moving for the holidays, but they'll move that to trucks. UPS can pull that off the rails and move it to trucks. The problem is everything that moves on the rails can't be moved to trucks. There are not enough trucks. You need another 500,000 trucks in the U.S. and a lot more truck drivers if you're going to move it off the rails.
Well,
to the truck.
And last time you were on the program, we talked about the shortage in drivers, and then you talked about the backlog at the ports. I also read, John, and explain this to our listeners, because when you hear that perhaps, you know, shipping isn't an issue like last year's, because some retailers still had just this inventory from last year because it came in late after the holiday season. Is that true too? Is that why you're saying that the supply chain may not be such a big issue this year?
Yeah, right now there's no ships dwelling off the port of LA or Long Beach.
And it wasn't that long ago that it was almost like 30.
There were 30. There were 50. At this time last year, there were over 100. Now, the East Coast ports have some backlog. Savannah has been extremely busy as a lot of people are redirecting freight to the East Coast for a couple reasons. Number one, the longshoremen, the port worker, they still don't have a deal mm-hmm. on the West Coast ports, and that impacts 26 ports. In fact, last week there was a shutdown in Oakland, mm-hmm. Basically shut down the port. They're having protests, and there have been some miniature strikes in Alabama as well.
And we've seen a few, not a lot, but there have been some Amazon distribution centers where workers were saying, we're not going back in until we get a deal done. Labor. Now, I mean, this is a major force here.
Labor is causing a lot of concern. That's really driving the current issues within the supply chain. There's enough capacity right now from a parcel standpoint, from a trucking standpoint. There's excess capacity from an ocean standpoint and an air cargo standpoint. Rates are dropping considerably. Things are running much more smoothly in those areas, but the labor issues are causing a lot of concerns. And there's some weather, obviously, coming in that could be very concerning, even, you know, next couple of days.
How would you assess that retailers, big and small, have weathered because before we always talked about the pandemic, but how would you assess how they weathered through that storm? And now this is a different type of storm.
Yeah, well, the retailers right now are stuck with way too much inventory. The news from Black Friday and Cyber Monday, it looks good on the surface. And then Black Friday set records for the largest single sales day in history, with sales up almost 6% over last year. But at what price? At what discounts?
Right, because I got a great deal on those curtains. And let's be really clear that Cyber Monday activity netted about $11.6 billion.
Yes.
Surprising to you, I guess not.
It's a little bit surprising. It looks to me, and as well as some other experts, that people are kind of returning to the pre-pandemic event sales, mm-hmm. where the discounts started a week ago. You didn't see a ton of activity, but then Black Friday hit and mm-hmm. Cyber Monday hit, and the numbers are off the charts. And so it looks like we're moving back into some of the pre-pandemic patterns, where we're buying a lot of stuff on these specialized days rather than spreading it out over the long term. But we'll see how things play out.
Well, depending on what you just said, how things play out going into 2023, what's your outlook? I mean, the supply chain, are we going to no longer have to talk about this gridlock? Is the gridlock over?
The gridlock is... it's easing. I would say you can never say it's over, because you're one event away from gridlock taking place.
Yes, we know.
Like this rail strike. I mean,
well, and there's still a war, in the war in Ukraine. There's a lot, inflation for this country. I mean, there's a lot of optics
there.
They
are. And even though we're talking December 9th, I mean, it's already impacting things. People are already making plans to pull stuff off the rails. They have to pull it before they can... It is already impacting things.
Might then we see a surplus of the actual mode of transportation, the ships? We know we're low in trucking, but what about all these ships? And everyone was so concerned about, and we need more ships. Now I'm wondering, when we get to 2023, will we have this surplus of ships?
You have a huge surplus of ships. There are blank sailings all over the place. Sailings are being canceled. The sailings from Asia to the U.S. Volumes have plummeted, and they are expected to continue to plummet in during the first half of 2023. So there's a huge amount of excess capacity on ships.
Well, what about what's happening in China right now?
Yes,
again, folk. I mean, this is the human factor. Again, is at the core of how this. It's just amazing how this shapes the, not just in China, but the entire global chain, supply chain.
It does. I just saw yesterday that Apple is expecting a shortfall of 6 million mm-hmm. iPhones because of the manufacturing issues at the Foxconn plant, who makes, they make the parts that go into the iPhone. And that's where a lot of the protests are going on.
Well, bring back the old flip phone.
Bring back the flip phone, the burner phone.
Burner. What y'all doing over there at transportation inside using burner? If you had to, and I've asked you this before, when you look into that crystal ball, that logistics and transportation and all this, what's the metric for saying we'll have a banner year for 2023 and all of this? What needs to happen? What needs not to happen? I guess inflation for this nation would be or recession, rather.
Yeah, to have a banner year for 2023, that's going to be dependent on inflation mm-hmm. in the economy. It looks like the Fed is going to continue to raise interest rates. Inflation has, come down somewhat, but it's not being we're not seeing it being predicted to come down much as we go into the first half of 2023. So that's really going to be the driver of what makes a banner year or a less than a banner year for 2023.
What are you all telling your clients who use your services at Transportation Insight?
We are telling our clients to stay the course, pay attention every single day. We're seeing it's an opportunity to reduce cost in certain areas. And based on the way the economy is moving.
Now, when you say reduce costs, folks think about layoffs or, reduction in. That's not what you're talking about, right? I don't want nobody to lose a job, John.
We're certainly not advocating layoffs. In fact, we're hiring. We have 350 jobs posted
right
now.
What you hiring for? Now, last time you were here, you said you were hiring. I got all these resumes. I can't guarantee anybody a job. What are y'all hiring for?
Everything's posted out on our board. Go
IT?
To LinkedIn, IT, you name it, across every single function. We've got job posting, salespeople, IT people, engineers, You across all functions, finance people, we need people. We're
you need a lot PR of people because I had a hard time trying to reach you.
I'm not touching that one in case our PR folks are listening.
No, we're just teasing. We just I'm gonna get in trouble.
We have a lot of open positions, and we, as opposed to some of our competitors who have announced large layoffs.
Yeah.
There's no doubt there's a lot of layoffs. We're going the opposite course. We're looking to ramp up staffing and looking to take use this as an opportunity to take market share because we're ready. We're reinvesting in the business, but we're seeing big layoffs in a lot of other sectors.
Yeah, well, send me your resume, rose@wabe.org. I'm going to forward these to you. Now, again, I'm not copping for anybody's skill set. I'm just saying. We'll forward you the emails.
We would love to see some resumes, so please send them our way.
John Habers, Chief Strategy Officer for Transportation Insight. Now, they moved from Charlotte to Alpharetta here early this summer, right?
We are building our new corporate headquarters in Sandy Springs.
Why Sandy Springs? How come you come to Atlanta?
Rose, I can't answer these questions. I'm just the Chief Strategy Officer.
Your phone is probably saying you are never coming back to Closer Look. John, as always, I appreciate you taking the time. And, of course, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thanks for having me once again. Always great talking to you.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Way back in 2018, remember that year? Then WABE reporter Ross Terrell filed this.
They look like the Razor Scooters kids ride around, except you don't push off with one leg. They're electric. You stand on them and you're on your way. You unlock them using an app and a code on the scooter. I decided to ride one. I'm going to try my first Bird scooter. So far, I've entered my driver's license information, debit card, and I scanned the code, and here we go. I found this scooter outside Centennial Olympic Park. They're scattered around the city. An app tells you where to find them. As I zipped around downtown, I wasn't really sure what rules I was supposed to follow, so I asked the city's chief bicycle officer, Becky Katz.
I think you should operate in accordance to all traffic laws. You must yield to pedestrians in crosswalks, and scooters are not currently allowed on sidewalks.
Wow. Well, the rest is history. And at one point, there were at least 7 e-scooter rental companies operating in Atlanta. The scooters were welcome, and the scooters were hated, depending on whom you ask. Now, micro-mobility advocates called the addition of electric scooters a step in the right direction as a viable mode of transportation, but it would take nearly almost 2 years before city legislation would be adopted into better regulating these e-scooter rentals and bikes. And tragically, there were fatalities as well. Now, all this led to the city council to ban renting these e-scooters and e-bikes between the hours of 9 p.m. and 4 a.m., all for the purpose of public safety. But now comes a Georgia Tech study looking at the effects of that ban, including results showing an increase in vehicle traffic congestion. So let's talk to Dr. Omar Asensio, assistant professor in the School of Public Policy at Georgia Tech. Professor, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be with you today, Rose.
You ride scooters?
I certainly ride scooters. In fact, I rode one today on my way to work at Georgia Tech.
What street were you riding down?
That's right, it's Spring Street.
Are you insane?
That's right. You know, you're absolutely right. It does take a little bit of a sense of adventure to sometimes ride certain streets in Midtown, of course. And of course, there's been, you know, some movements towards building dedicated lanes to assist with these micromobility devices, scooters and e-bikes. But obviously, the coverage of dedicated lanes is very thin across the city.
Yeah, well, you still have folks who say, look, you know, you all are talking, and this is a whole nother story. We talk about, you know, bike lanes, but listen, every neighborhood, as you know, there's not equity in every neighborhood. So for some neighborhoods, they say, look, can we get sidewalks first? Let's back up. Why did you all want to study the impact of this ban to begin with? And what were you looking at?
So this is a great question. So, you know, if you look at global projections for the growth of micromobility, the estimates are that this market is going to be worth $300 billion by 2030. And so this is across China, Europe, and the United States. So this, you know, movement in the urban centers to allow for this like mixed mode use with shared scooters and shared, you know, electric bikes is really a global phenomenon. And so there's been, you know, as you mentioned, on both sides of this debate, whether or not scooters actually have an impact on sustainability in cities. And the idea is that if scooters displaced car use for first and last mile travel, then that has the potential to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And of course, with that comes the air pollution, air quality co-benefits associated with those emissions.
So, you know, someone listening says, listen, from sustainability and in the environment and all that, that's great to hear, we know, but there is an issue with public safety. And also for cities, some cities, infrastructure. They just don't have the infrastructure to meet the demand and the growth of all these e-scooters and e-bikes. When you look at a city like Atlanta, and I'm asking for your assessment here, is the city of Atlanta equipped from an infrastructure standpoint to handle this micro-mobility as a 24-hour mode of transportation with the e-scooters?
Sure. I mean, I think what we're seeing is that the city of Atlanta has really been a leader nationwide in terms of allowing the proliferation of electric scooters. And of course, you know, already back in 2019, when the original safety regulation went into place, there were over 10,000 permitted devices that were already floating around and being used across the city, which is you know, quite a startling number for any urban center. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we're seeing now is that both the physical infrastructure needed to support these devices and the digital infrastructure, you know, investments have to be made in both of these areas. And what's happened really is that the innovation has really happened, mm-hmm. and we're kind of having to catch up on building the necessary infrastructure.
Well, and that's a problem not just for Atlanta, but a lot of cities. So with this study, tell our listeners what came out of it. Give us an executive summary, if you can.
Sure. So we essentially, you know, in 2019, when the public safety regulation was put into place, the city of Atlanta passed what are called no-ride zones. Mm-hmm. And this is using a new technology called geofencing that would remotely shut down these devices to comply with the regulation, of course, from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m., as you mentioned. And so one of the interesting, you know, innovations of the way the implementation of the policy, you know, went into effect is that, you know, we could automatically have near perfect compliance to that safety regulation. Mm-hmm. So sure enough, at 9:01 p.m., when the time of the ban was enacted, all of the scooter provide all these digital platforms would automatically shut down these devices, and you can no longer rent the scooter.
Right.
So this created in the city of Atlanta a perfect natural experiment to understand what do users, you know, how do users get around, and what do they do when scooters are suddenly not available. And so, you know, in the study, we leveraged a very large data set from Uber called Uber Movement for the city of Atlanta, which allowed us to to quantify the effect of this sudden ban on scooters on urban traffic congestion, mm-hmm. in terms of the travel times in the city center. So we compared Midtown and other census tracts around the covered policy areas to figure out whether or not if users are no longer able to use these scooters at night, then would they substitute back to just, you know, using their cars and ride sharing? And sure enough,
that's what they did.
Sure enough, what we find is that, of course, for daily evening commutes, we found a 9 to 11% increase in urban traffic congestion due to the ban. And of course, we also looked at event-based mobility. That's like traveling around Mercedes-Benz mm-hmm. Stadium after the Atlanta United games in the summer. And we found up to 37% increase in urban traffic congestion. So this, you know, this study was kind of the first one to show definitively that scooters are actually displacing cars and personal ride sharing for first and last mile travel.
Well, and depending on whom you ask, that could be a good thing or that could be a bad thing. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, are we trying to have less cars on the road? Or are we talking about having that extra mode of transportation for folks who do not have a car? So it's, you know, depends on whom you ask. With this information, could this support a policy recommendation for the city, you think?
I think, you know, the interesting part here is that, you know, cities will then have to weigh these important trade-offs and unintended consequences of these safety regulations. On mm-hmm. the one hand, having these evening, you know, bans after sunset could help mitigate problems of mortality and morbidity associated with these kinds of accidents and things that are, you know, sometimes preventable. But on the other hand, it does come with real costs of congestion, which we estimated worth, you know, $3.5 to $10.5 million in congestion costs when you look at the value of time sitting in traffic. And so that was, you know, if you kind of extend that out to kind of in a conservative estimate, what that would be worth on a national basis, you know, these congestion costs can add up on the order of over $530 million across the U.S.
Yeah. And then, you know, someone listening says, look, we understand that, but you cannot put a price on human life. You know, there's public safety. I mean, tragically, there were fatalities that happened with the scooters. Is there a somewhere in the middle, you think? You know, because some people who get off work, some folks may get off work at 10 a.m. or at midnight. And look, MARTA, they stop, the train stopped running at a certain time, perhaps a bus. You know what it's like to try to get a bus if you work in, you know, late. I mean, so is there some happy middle here somewhere?
I think there certainly is. And, you know, this is going to be an important decision moving forward for many cities. And of course, Atlanta is, you know, somewhere in between. Of course, we do see that we have constant innovation in this area and at the same time has established as a leader in urban mobility in this way. And so I think, you know, studies such as these can kind of help pave the way for understanding what are the true impacts of these new urban mobility solutions, particularly for sustainability related applications.
If you had to make a recommendation, would you tell the city officials, I think you all should lift the ban? That's what I want. Yes or no?
Fortunately, we checked the other night, with, you know, my students and my teams, and we just, hey, let's figure out if this ban is still in place, because certainly there's been no public announcement. And so sure enough, last night we tried to see whether or not we could reserve a scooter. And, the good news or bad news, depending on your perspective, is that you could still reserve any Bird scooter or any one of the electric bikes in the evening. So I think we're back in full operation.
So wait, are you saying that there is no ban? Is that what you're saying?
So the ban, my understanding is the ban has now been lifted.
Really? Because my producer, Daniel, said, it sounds like somebody gossiping. Daniel said he tried to get a scooter and it was like, nah, this ain't happening. Now what? Y'all didn't do something to the scooter to, you know, like break it. Y'all are smart over there at Georgia Tech. Y'all didn't, your students didn't do something over there, did they, Professor?
Well, they still have their service territory. So as long as you're in the service territory and you got your credit card, they'll give you a scooter.
Let me ask you this as we begin to wrap up. And we've talked about this before. We actually did a series called Gridlock, What's Moving Atlanta in Terms of the Future. And micromobility is such a big part of it. Are there any other cities around the nation that are kind of doing it right when it comes to regulating the e-scooters and the e-bikes? I know Detroit has a pretty good program from what I understand.
Right. I mean, it's been a mixed bag in terms of, you know even within a single metro area, you have cities that are leaning in terms of allowing proliferation, and then neighboring cities going all in on preventing them completely. And so I think what we're seeing, Rose, is a very large urban-suburban divide. And so depending on the makeup and political pressures on allowing these kinds of urban mobility solutions, you'll see a different mix of regulations. So if you look at what happened in San Francisco or Los Angeles, right, you have like Santa Monica suddenly deciding to ban the scooters, and then all of a sudden they come back next door, but then in the downtown area, you know, they're in. So it's a very complicated mix of support and depending on, you know, this urban and suburban mix.
Well, and then also too, look, we know early on when this was just all the rage, there were some cities that were trying to sue because they didn't want the scooters, and there were some scooter companies that were trying to sue because they said we have a right to be here. And it came down, I think, to legislation. Is this something that's going to have to be regulated with legislation, depending on wherever you live, that's what it's going to have to come down to?
I think that's right. I mean, and for many years, the question was, is there a viable business model to keep these kind of, you know, scooter mobility providers going? And mm-hmm. So I think, you know, in terms of the buying and selling of these scooters for personal travel, of course, we see that through e-commerce. You can buy your own personal scooter, sure, on Amazon or any other kind of thing. But I think the real innovation is, you know, you have the solution when you need it. And so this idea of shared micromobility mm-hmm. was really the key to driving, just making it easier for people to have it available when they need it for this last mile travel. So I think, you know, the mix of this $300 billion market is a combination of consumers deciding to buy their own form of scooter or electric bike to get around the city, whether it be for recreational use or getting around to their job, or
might cities just say, look, we don't want any other brands, we'll have our own scooters.
That's right.
We already have our bikes, so we could have our own scooters.
And, you know, this is, you know, in the U.S., we believe in competition, so that we'll see how it plays out.
Dr. Omar Asensio, assistant professor in the School of Public Policy at Georgia Tech, thank you so much for taking time. I really appreciate it. We'll have a link to your study. Very fascinating. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Rose.
And that's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are LaShawn Hudson, Daniel Razel, and Pat St. Clair. Our engineer is Kevin Rinker. He rides a bike. A reminder to let us know your thoughts on today's program or any other. Send me an email, rose@wabe.org. And Daniel wanted me to let you all know that he rides a bike as well. And if you missed any of today's program, it's online at wabe.org/closerlook. And of course, Closer Look weeknights at 7 p.m. as well as in our podcast. So subscribe to Closer Look wherever you like. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of mysteries. Are ghosts real? Is that yogurt expired? Hey, the unknown can be scary, but when you donate to WABE, you know where your money is going. Your gift supports the journalism that keeps you informed and the programs that pull back the curtain on complicated stories. Help us make the world less mysterious. Become a member now. Go online to wabe.org/donate, and thanks.